Hello, and thank you for tuning in to this episode of Wild Virginia Virtual Coffee Talk. I am your host, Katie Keller, and you know, it's been a while since we've been on the podcast, but now is an extremely exciting time. We are expanding the campaign areas that we're working on, and so PFAS is our topic that we're going to discuss today. You may know a little bit about it, but I have two experts who have done a ton of research. I have David Sly, our conservation director, on the line, and I have Jackie Goodrum, our conservation policy consultant, and we're going to tell y'all about what PFAS is, why you should care about it, and some of the harms that it causes to humans and wildlife, which is going to be the focus of our campaign. So thank you both for joining me.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah, no, so glad to have you on the line. So Dave, I'm going to pick on you first. Tell us, what is PFAS?
Okay, so PFAS is the easy way to represent a big chemical sounding name, per and polyfluoroalkyl substances. Basically, that's a big group of like chemicals that have similar characteristics. It's in lots and lots of products that we use that have been developed over the last 70 years or so. Things like Teflon that a lot of people recognize. It's important, or it's useful, because it's resistant to water. And so it's something that we've seen is really beneficial to a lot of uses. It's also in things like firefighting foam. Problem is that it's also dangerous, and it can cause or contribute to a lot of health problems, and it's throughout the environment now, because it's in so many products. It's really spread throughout our water, our bodies even, and our wildlife. So it is something that we're finding more and more in water supplies and streams and reservoirs, and as I say, in bodies. And one of the characteristics is that it doesn't go away easily. People call them forever chemicals, because they persist, they don't break down easily, and they accumulate. It's not as if they pass through your body. They accumulate in fish, they accumulate in the sediments of streams, and again, they accumulate in us. So there's a lot to be worried about, and that's why we're taking on this subject.
Well, it has definitely gained a lot more media attention, I would say, recently. And listeners might be wondering some other examples. It's really that water resistance piece. So you can think of a lot of products that contain that. Other examples of products containing PFAS: nonstick cookware, pesticides, candy wrappers, fast food packaging. So, I mean, this stuff is everywhere. And so let's talk a little bit, Jackie, what are some of the health effects of PFAS on both humans and wildlife?
Sure. So we know from scientific studies conducted by both academic as well as government researchers that even low levels of PFAS exposure can have significant negative health effects on humans as well as animals. So for humans, these negative health effects include increased risk of certain kinds of cancers, like kidney cancer, prostate cancer, testicular cancer, and other reproductive cancers, an increased risk of high cholesterol, obesity, increased risk of developmental delays in children, decreased fertility, increased high blood pressure during pregnancy, and reduced immune system function, including a reduced effectiveness of vaccine uptake, because PFAS exposure can disrupt our body's ability to generate antibodies as an appropriate and necessary vaccine response. Similarly, for wildlife, PFAS exposure can cause negative developmental and reproductive impacts, such as impaired reproductive success, liver and kidney cancers, endocrine system dysfunction, and weakened immune systems. And we know this is the case from current peer-reviewed scientific studies of PFAS exposure in fish, amphibians, shellfish, and other aquatic animals. What's particularly worrisome about the wildlife piece is that wildlife higher up the aquatic food chain can accumulate greater concentrations of PFAS, because PFAS is bioaccumulative. And so that means that these predator animals eat prey animals contaminated by PFAS, and then those animals higher up the food chain, birds as one example, are being found to be just full of PFAS. And so for wildlife, in a way, PFAS could be like DDT, where it has the potential to silence the woods and ponds by harming species' ability to reproduce and survive.
Wow. I mean, we're all just filled with PFAS and microplastics, it seems like. I mean, I feel like everyone is going to throw out their nonstick cookware and realize, you know, cast iron. I mean, the effects of this on both humans and wildlife is really scary. And so I know that, you know, working to protect wildlife from things like this, we're going to have to engage our state agencies. And so, Dave, I know, similar to our water campaigns, how is Wild Virginia going to do this?
So to start with, like you say, it seems like it's everywhere. It's scary. There's so many things to think about. Like you say, you know, how do we handle our consumer products? Do we just stop buying certain things, stop producing certain things? And probably that's part of the picture. Also, you know, how do we handle water supplies where it's already in our drinking water? And how are we going to deal with that? How do we do more investigations? But that can seem overwhelming. And we think there is a really good way to address this. And it's consistent with the way that Wild Virginia works otherwise. And that is the fact that there are specific requirements already in place under the Clean Water Act and under state water protection laws that say that certain kinds of activity, discharges from wastewater plants or industries, where PFAS is certainly entering the environment, that those parties that are regulated have to figure out what waste are coming out of their plants and have to control them. So the state of Virginia, EPA, already have authority and duties to find out where that stuff is coming from, what kind of facilities, and to insist that it be controlled, that it be eliminated from those discharges, because, you know, it's so much better to stop it from entering the environment than to try to deal with it after it has gotten out there. As Jackie described, I mean, once it is starting to accumulate, you know, how do you deal with it then? Once it gets into our water supplies, we have to spend tons of money to try to take it back out so we're not ingesting it. So again, we're starting at kind of one of the big sources, those regulated activities that are releasing it to our environment. And we're saying to the responsible officials, just frankly, do your job. These laws are already in place for a lot of other that they apply to a lot of other kinds of pollution or pollutants, and they apply to PFAS as well. So we're insisting, by commenting on specific discharge permits, by talking about how they can use existing regulations to stop this, to identify it and to stop it from getting out there. The good thing about that is it doesn't require us to figure everything out. We already know enough to do that. And it can and should be done now without a lot more wait and deliberation.
It makes total sense that Wild Virginia would start working on this issue. And sort of the common theme, a part of a lot of our campaigns, is just holding these state agencies and other parties, you know, who are discharging this stuff, accountable. And so, Jackie, I know that you've done a ton of research. I mean, really technical stuff here. What other sort of things should listeners keep in mind when it comes to PFAS?
Sure. So first, I do want to highlight what Davis said and acknowledge that there are actions that our government can take right now to address this issue at the macro level, that the legal and regulatory framework are already in place, and that this is a problem that can be solved by stopping PFAS pollution at its source. But in the meantime, I wonder if listeners want to know, what can I do on the micro level? What can I be doing at home and in my community to reduce our individual risk of PFAS exposure for us and our families? Because there are numerous pathways of PFAS exposure, and polluted water is a big one. Particularly ingesting contaminated water and food is a major exposure pathway. So something that you can do at home now, while we are working on enforcing the Clean Water Act against the state agencies that need to uphold their responsibilities, the one thing that can be done now is filtering drinking water, because our conventional water treatment systems don't remove PFAS from drinking water or wastewater. And as Dave was saying, PFAS discharges can contaminate drinking water. Food, if you're able to, consume less quantities of fish or shellfish or even game meat that come from PFAS contaminated areas, because these animals that are in water contaminated by PFAS have large amounts of PFAS in their bodies, and communities, studies have shown that communities that rely heavily on subsistence fishing are communities that are likely to have higher levels of PFAS in their bodies. In Virginia, we don't yet have state established fish and game consumption advisories, but other states do if you're looking for guidance. Maine is one example. So those are just a couple things that you can do right now to reduce your PFAS exposure while this whole regulatory process is playing out.
So a lot of research, it sounds like, needs to be done within the particular area that listeners might be living in. I do have a question. I mean, we're coming up to Halloween. Kids like candy. Both of you, have you thought of any alternatives to stuff like that?
So I don't actually hand out candy for Halloween, but stickers is something that I guess you could give out. Also, you know, if you are doing trick-or-treating with like a group in your neighborhood, perhaps consider using like ceramic mugs or glassware to carry your beverages if that's something you do in your neighborhood, rather than even paper cups, because even the insides of those cups are coated with a lining that has PFAS in it. Just like the nonstick cookware, research your cookware brand. I actually threw out a pot the other day because I've been staring at it for a few months since I started doing this research, and finally Googled the brand and confirmed that it was a brand that uses PFAS chemicals, and I decided I was done with it and threw it out. That would felt like a big thing to do, but it was something that I felt was necessary in order to reduce my family's individual exposure. Oh, something that actually is really easy to do, because while we have contaminated food and water being major pathways of exposure, inhalation of contaminated air is another major pathway. And this is because so many consumer products, including upholstered furniture, are treated with PFAS, chemicals containing PFAS. So furniture, for example, if you have certain carpets or chairs, they might have Scotchgard in them, and Scotchgard is a product that contains PFAS. And we in North America spend on average 90% of our time indoors. So something that we can do to reduce our exposure is go outside.
I love that. Everybody get outside. You know, that's the theme at Wild Virginia.
Indeed, yes.
We have established what we are doing. Dave, we constantly in all of our campaign areas are working with partners. So what are our other partners doing to help work toward these goals that we have?
Sure. Well, you know, we have worked with kind of a team of organizations on looking at the kind of specific approaches that we're taking, but also at some of the larger policy issues. Some groups that we've really worked closely with are folks like the Southern Environmental Law Center, the Potomac Riverkeeper Network, Rockbridge Conservation, which works on specific water issues and even things like sewage sludge land application in their areas. We've started to work with a group called the Blue Ridge Environmental Defense League, and all of them, they're both interested in our specific approach and are willing to be advocates or allies in that, but also are thinking about other aspects. For example, the Blue Ridge Environmental Defense League has been looking very closely at guidelines for drinking water and how those are going to be approached. So people are taking different parts of the issue and kind of pushing those forward. But at the same time, we're working to come up with a more unified strategy. And I will say that the Virginia Conservation Network, which kind of coordinates and convenes the broad conservation community in Virginia, they produce an agenda each year. It's called Our Common Agenda. And it lists and explains what has been a consensus view of the top priorities for the whole state for the coming year. And PFAS is one of those. We helped co-author the policy piece in that agenda. And so it is growing quickly to more and more groups who see it, you know, whether it's in their specific watershed or stream or just, you know, community-based efforts. There are folks here in Charlottesville, for example, who have been concerned about PFAS coming from the materials that are on playing fields, you know, these artificial turfs that can have this kind of material. So there are lots of approaches, and we're quickly figuring out how to work together, how to make our efforts stronger by doing them in concert.
Well, we are all cogs in this very critical wheel, and it does take a village. And I'm certainly going to be Googling all of the brands in my home to protect my village. So, Jackie, again, thank you both for joining today. I'm learning so much about this issue. And Jackie, since you've done so much research, any closing thoughts on PFAS in general? Or I know that you noted how people can get involved in their own homes, but are there ways that members can get involved in sort of our campaign?
Sure. So first, I suggest continuing to learn about the issue. WAD Virginia is having a town hall on Zoom later in the month where we will be sharing facts, information about PFAS, as well as strategies for our campaign and ways, specific ways for people to get involved. So tell your friends, tell your family, talk to other people about it. There are definitely people in my friend circle and in my family who have no idea what PFAS is, and I've started talking with them about it. And so just help others learn about it as you learn about it. Another thing you can do is obviously contact your state legislative representative and share your concerns about PFAS and what our state government is not doing to protect us. The last thing I was going to suggest is to vote, because it is an election year in Virginia and a significant portion of the legislature is up for election. And obviously this is important for environmental protection generally, but as we go forward with protecting water quality and addressing PFAS pollution, having legislators who are concerned about this issue would be wonderful.
You know, just what Jackie is saying is, you know, attend our online town hall, but basically just, you know, we need your support for WAD Virginia always. You know, get our emails, get on our list, support our work. We work on these kinds of things every day, but we're only allowed to do that because our members and our supporters allow us to do that. They make it possible. And we specialize, one of our favorite things to do is to give you specific ways that you can plug in. It's not just our voice saying to these regulators, do your job.
Thanks for listening to this episode of WAD Virginia Virtual Coffee Talk. Until next time, stay wild, WAD Virginians.
Join us for a special town hall on PFAS. Learn more at wildvirginia.org.